breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
A warmer fuzzy low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you as we're going to be joined in segment number two by a good friend of ours, Danny Vietti. He does such great work over at CBS Sports. Along with that, the Wake and Rake podcast. We'll get his thoughts on what we've all seen here in the first week plus of the MLB postseason. We'll get his thoughts on all these series. He did provide a little bit of insight on Yankees versus Blue Jays, even though at the time that we recorded, we weren't quite sure if we were going to be getting a game number four or not, but we're going to be chatting with him about all those series, how the Dodgers are looking so rock solid, the Seattle Mariners, what they are bringing to the table, and so much more. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, there's the M, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter / X questions today, everything is powered by Edge Boost. Over at Edge Boost, they're making sure that bettors are able to access their funds whenever and wherever they want. With Edge Boost, 100% of gambling transactions do get approved. And when you go to edgeboost.bet, put in that promo code of Greg, G-R-E-G. That'll get you a dollar-for-dollar match on your first deposit up to $25. Now let's take a look back at everything that we saw in baseball on Tuesday, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The Seattle Mariners take a 2-1 lead on the Detroit Tigers. They get the job done by a count of 8-4 as for Seattle. This was a really good start from Logan Gilbert. Gives up one run over the course of 6 innings. Matt Brash, Edward Bizzardo both on his scoreless inning. Caleb Ferguson had himself a heck of a time in the 9th inning. He does not get a single out. He gives up 3 runs, so Andrés Munoz, he only used 9 pitches, but the Mariners did have to burn him up in the 9th inning. He was able to come in, keep it scoreless. And for Captain Jack Flaherty, he was captain of the SS, giving up runs. 3 1/3 innings, gives up 4 runs, 3 of which were earned, and he was taken deep in this one as Eugenio Suarez gets his first home run of the postseason. Then off of Bryant Herter, J.P. Crawford gets a home run. Cal Raleigh, big dumper, 61st home run season between the regular season and the postseason. He goes deep off of Brendan Hennepy. For Hennepy, he gives up 2 runs over the course of his inning work. Cadillo Montero, he gives up an unearned run in 2 1/3 innings. Brian Herter, 1 2/3 innings. He allowed a solo home run. And Tommy Canley, pair of outs out of the bullpen squirrels. And then for the Blue Jays, they did get up 6-1 on the New York Yankees, but in the end, the Yankees were able to come back and win by a count of 9-6 as Aaron Judge, who has had his postseason struggles in the past, he came up with a big 3-run home run when the team needed it. I believe that they were down 6-3 when he hit it, and that came in the 4th inning that was able to tie it up at 6-6 as for Shane Bieber, he had a fever for giving up runs in this one. 3 runs, 2 of which were earned. He only made it 2 2/3 innings, and Carlos Rodon gave up all 6 runs for the Yankees, including a home run to Vladimir Jr., his 3rd home run of the campaign. That put the Yankees in a big hole, but how about this from the Yankees bullpen? Camilo Yudavala, squirrel setting, Tim Hill, Devin Williams, Fernando Cruz, they were all able to give you 4 outs out of the bullpen squirrels. David Benar does not poop the Benar. He gets 5 outs scoreless to be able to get the save. And for the Blue Jays, not so much a case for this bullpen. Mason Flaherty, 2 runs, 1 of which was earned, given up in 2/3 of an inning before Louis Varland. He gave up that home run to Judge. He also gave up a solo home run to Jazz Chisholm. For Jazz Chisholm, his 1st of the postseason. Braden Fisher gets up a run in 2/3 of an inning. Brandon Little, he gives up a run in 2/3 of an inning. Uriel Rodriguez, 4 outs out of the bullpen squirrels. And Tommy Nancy, scoreless inning, but too little too late as the Yankees go 6 of 12 with men in scoring position. So on Tuesday, we saw both favorites be able to come through, albeit a little bit hairy in the case of the New York Yankees, but they did find a way to persevere, and you saw both of the overs be able to come through as well. If you're taking overall a look at the postseason, favorites are 12-5 on the money line over the last 7 days, so they're hitting at north of a clip of 70%, and the overs are really starting to take hold. 9-7 to the over, so that pretty much match discounts the first day of the wild card round. But past that, we have been seeing some overwhelming action out here in the baseball playoffs. So that's where we're all seeing trend-wise with regards to the Major League playoffs. And that's what we all got on Tuesday. Coming up next, how about if we do take a look at the landscape of these MLB playoffs, take a look at all these series, and so much more with Danny Vietti of CBS Sports and the Wake and Rake podcast right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now for the VSiN Family Podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as Danny Vietti. He does such great work over at CBS Sports, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. I know he does a tremendous job with his own podcast, the Wake and Rake Podcast. You're able to find that wherever you hear a podcast. He does that with Will Middlebrooks, who he's got ties to a pair of teams that made the postseason. He was a world champion with the Red Sox. Unfortunately, their season is done, but a former Milwaukee Brewer, so we still have that going. And for Danny, just such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this great game. You're able to follow him on the old Twitter /X at his first and last name, Danny Vietti. Last name is spelled V-I-E-T-T-I. And Danny, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Pleasure's all mine, man. It's been a fun couple weeks and kind of crazy to think we're just getting started here in the postseason.
Absolutely, and we have got ourselves a lot of fun coming up. Now, we are doing this before knowing the results that happened on Tuesday because we had a very long rain delay out there in Detroit, and obviously with the Toronto versus New York series, by the time you hear this, we might have a game four. We might be having Toronto heading on over to the next series, but how do you take a look at things with regards to the Blue Jays? Because I just don't see a world where the Yankees are able to win three straight, and I think that this Blue Jays team has just really been able to find their swagger at the right time, and I was thoroughly impressed by what we saw over the weekend.
They've got to get to the Blue Jay bullpen. That was the Achilles heel for Toronto much of the season. And their starting pitchers, Gosman, Savage, I mean, they've been great through those first two games. I know New York scored 7 runs in game 2, but they really didn't knock out their starter until I think it was the 6th inning or maybe even 7th, something like that. I don't have the stats in front of me, but they've got to force the Blue Jays to dip into that bullpen early on in the game because the Blue Jays do not have depth back there. They have a great lineup. The power is all of a sudden surging now. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is the hottest hitter on the planet right now. It's starting pitching has been there much of the season, if not all of the season, especially since they got Shane Bieber at the deadline. But the Achilles heel for the Blue Jays has been that bullpen. And so far through 2 games, they've been okay. But this is going to be the biggest obstacle for Toronto is when the season in the series gets longer and longer and all of a sudden you're having to go to your 4th bullpen member, your 5th bullpen member. Oh, you can't go to one of your starting pitchers because you got to use them for game 4. That sort of situation is going to arise likely at some point. For Toronto, they want to shorten this series. They want to make it a clean sweep in 3. But if you're the New York Yankees, you just want to dip into that bullpen and spread it as thin and as thin as possible. And I think it starts with plate discipline at the plate. Get that starting pitcher out of there. Try and get his pitch count as high as possible. Force the Toronto Blue Jays to have to play some games of chess back there. Because thus far through the first 2 games, they've been able to stick to the script.
Yes, they certainly have been able to. And for this Toronto Blue Jays team, they've just been able to slug their way to victory. And if they do persevere here against the New York Yankees, they'll be playing the winner of the Seattle Mariners and Detroit Tigers series. Which team do you think they would match up a little bit better against? Because with the Tigers, they obviously had their skids towards the back half of the regular season, but found it in that series against the Cleveland Guardians. And for the Seattle Mariners, as we know, they've got a lot of firepower on offense, but they're a team that plays in such a pitcher-friendly ballpark. And we saw those 2 games against the Detroit Tigers, so where it was really hard for either team to generate offense.
Yeah, I just base it on what's on paper, and Seattle has a better team on paper. And I say that while speaking right now, this series is tied 1-1 between Seattle and Detroit. So, you know, in 2 days, this could become very, very foul and completely soiled at this point. But on paper, Seattle has a deeper rotation. You know, obviously, I've been saying this for months now. When Tarek Skubal is on the hill for Detroit, they are the best team in baseball. And as a matter of fact, when Tarek Skubal is on the hill, he is unhittable. Good luck getting 2 runs off Tarek Skubal, because if you do, it's a success. That's how dominant he is. It's kind of like when Paul Skenes is on the mound for Pittsburgh. I mean, they are just tough to beat. That's how good Tarek Skubal is and has been. But Detroit, their lineup just they don't have the depth. They've really struggled since the All-Star break. They had, you know, All-Star caliber seasons. The guys like Kerry Carpenter and Torkelson got off to the hot start. But the second half has been just a completely different story. Similar with Javi Baez, who's an All-Star this year, is a great resurgence and resurrection. But it hasn't been the same story in the second half. The bullpen has struggled likewise. So on paper, Seattle has more depth. I mean, that offense with Randy, Julio, Cal Raleigh, Josh Naylor, although his status right now is up in the air due to his wife having a baby. But Seattle has more depth offensively. They have four starters that are able to pitch deep in the ball games, and they have a dominant bullpen to go along with it. So on paper, Seattle is who you would least want to face when comparing them to Detroit.
Yep, exactly. And with the Seattle Mariners team having Matt Brash, Andres Munoz, you just mentioned that bullpen, those guys are rock solid. And the starting pitching, without question, 1-3, Bryce Miller, you figure is going to get the ball in game 4, a little bit more suspect, but without question, that is big for the Seattle Mariners team. As Danny Vietti, he does such great work over at CBS Sports. He's joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show, and it's going to be interesting to see what we get in the American League side of things. And with the National League, we know exactly what we're going to be getting in terms of game number 3, because, well, these teams did not play on Tuesday. But that said, how do you take a look at things with regards to the Milwaukee Brewers and the Chicago Cubs series? Because for the Cubs, Jameson Taillon has actually been really good for them, but it's a do-or-die game for the Cubs where they took a 3-0 lead in the game on Monday, and it didn't even last for a full inning because the Brewers just completely snatched that away from them. And for the Brewers, I think that they're going to be up against it regardless of if they face the Dodgers or the Phillies, but this just has felt like such a good matchup for them against the Cubs.
It really has. You would know better than I, honestly, just being a Brewers fan and being able to watch them on a daily basis. I don't know what it is about Milwaukee facing off against Chicago. I don't know if it's a rivalry situation. I don't know if it's, you know, the fan fuel from it. But it seems like Milwaukee seems to just have the advantage against Chicago, at least in recent years. Obviously, we go back to the decades when Milwaukee was one of the worst franchises in baseball. Those days are behind us. And now you have this added layer of Craig Counsell now, you know, going from Milwaukee to Chicago, and then Chicago having a great offense this year. Milwaukee were the underdogs, and they've just completely ran away with it. I mean, the storylines across the board have been just fantastic in this series. And give Chicago credit. I mean, they've come out swinging, hitting home runs in back-to-back games to start the series. I mean, when Seiya Suzuki got this team on the board up 3-0 in game 2, you're thinking, okay, here comes Chicago. But then Milwaukee just always finds a way to have success at the plate, whether it be with the power numbers of Andrew Vaughn and Wilson Contreras, or maybe it's scratching a run across the board by bunting a guy over and finding a way with him scoring with runner on third base less than 2 outs. Like, Milwaukee just finds way to win ball games. It's never, I used the word script earlier when it came to Toronto's bullpen. Milwaukee doesn't have a script. It seems like they just find a way to get things done. And it could be with the power. It could be gap to gap. It could be move a guy over with a bunt. They have so many different ways that they can beat you. And I argued coming into this postseason, Milwaukee's not great at any one thing necessarily, maybe defensively, but they're good at everything. They don't seem to have any sort of weakness. Chicago, on the other hand, they have some swing and miss in their lineup. Their starting pitching can be a little shaky at times. In the postseason, any sort of weakness you have, a team eventually is going to find a way to expose it. And I think that's what Milwaukee is. It's been in their favor so far, is they really don't have a true weakness.
Yep, that is so true, because with the Brewers, even though they don't necessarily have a bunch of big giant mashers, only two guys that had 20-plus home runs during the regular season, it's a unit that just has so many guys who are able to move the line, a solid bullpen. Yeah, maybe the starting pitching isn't going to completely blow you away, but you don't need guys going 6-plus innings at this point in the postseason, especially when you've got that sort of bullpen as well. And then with the Brewers, you do have to figure if they are able to get past the Cubs, which I would think so, probably going to be playing against the Dodgers. The Dodgers are big, giant favorites going into their game on Wednesday against the Phillies, rightfully so. Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been rock solid, and Aaron Nola, unfortunately, has a 6 ERA. But just what have you seen out of the Dodgers? Because we just talked about the Brewers really not having a lot of weaknesses. For the Dodgers, that one Achilles heel this year was their bullpen, and now they have, I don't even think I'm kidding here, a $1 billion bullpen with Clayton Kershaw, Tyler Glasnow, and Rookie Sasaki coming through. It's just wild the amount of riches that this team has now that they're healthy.
It is. I think it would be more of a talking point if Philadelphia wasn't also a franchise that has been spending money in recent years. And I'm not trying to clown either team. believe me, I am a big advocate, big proponent of owners spending money. I think we should uplift these teams that do spend money as opposed to clowning them. We instead should be clowning the owners in baseball in Cleveland and Sacramento and Miami. Outside of Chicago, Miami, exactly. Those are the owners that we should be clowning. Pittsburgh, those are the owners we should be clowning. The time to clown owners is definitely not now, because there is a correlation. Milwaukee's a bit of an exception, but there's a correlation, especially these playoffs, between high payroll teams and making the playoffs. The Mets were another exception. There's exceptions every single year. You know, the Mets missed the playoffs despite having the highest payroll, but right behind them, Dodgers, Yankees are in the postseason right now. Toronto has a high payroll as well. I mean, there is a direct correlation with that. So going back to your question, the Dodgers on paper, in my opinion, just because they got healthy at the right time, I said this coming into the postseason, they're the best team in baseball. And I know record-wise, they probably weren't where they hoped to be at the end of the season, 88 wins on the season. They probably hoped to be a little bit closer to that 100, you know, three-digit threshold, but they got healthy at the right time. And Blake Snell's dealing, Yamamoto's dealing, and now you got Sasaki right now as a closer. I mean, they're in a good position to repeat as champs.
Yep, they certainly are. And with the LA Dodgers, I do think that they are the team to beat. And I'm not sure how you took a look at things coming into the postseason, but I really did think that the winner of this Phillies versus Dodgers series was going to be the World Series favorite, because I can't see any team in the American League being able to overthrow either the Phillies or the Dodgers. And for the Brewers, as much as we talk glowingly about them, if they face off against either team, and it's looking like it is going to be the Dodgers, I just think that they would have such a tough time against them.
Yeah, it's like a boom or bust situation with Philadelphia, right? Like, they, when they're booming, they boom, man. Like, Schwarber is one of the most dangerous hitters in baseball when he's hot. Castellanos, similarly, one of the best hitters in baseball. Bryce Harper, arguably the best hitter in baseball when he's hot, but one of the most feared hitters in baseball. But when the Phillies bust, it's just not quite the same lineup. And especially when you're faltering all at the same time. And the Dodgers pitching has just been phenomenal. And then that comes into the question, too. Like, Philadelphia was streaking towards the end of the season. They seemed to be riding a lot of hot bats going into the last month of the season. And then they got that layoff because of the bye, the first-round bye. And so that brings into question, okay, these once hot bats, they kind of go cold over that, you know, week-long break. Maybe that's a conversation for another day, and it could certainly make the case that that's just another excuse. But I will say with Philadelphia, I mean, this seems like kind of like the swan song. Zach Wheeler, unfortunately, down with injury. Bryce Harper's not getting any younger. Kyle Schwarber not getting any younger. Castellanos, a free agent at year's end. John Duran coming up on his free agency approaching. I mean, this is a pretty older roster, relatively speaking, to the rest of the league. It seems like contract-wise, free agency-wise, it's kind of seemed like Philadelphia, like this was their last hoorah with this bunch. Maybe they come back for one more season, they get healthy, and they could put on another run. But it seems like with Philadelphia, like if they don't come back from this 0-2 deficit, which is a massive, massive uphill climb due to the talent that the Dodgers possess, it could be the last big run for this Phillies bunch.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And the Trey Turner contract, when he grounded out with the team down by a run and Nick Castellanos getting thrown out at third on Monday, was not necessarily great. That really makes you wonder what the Phillies are going to be able to do moving forward, as Danny Vietti, who does such great work over at CBS Sports, is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And I want to close it up with a little bit more of an open-ended question, because we've talked a lot about these teams. We've talked a lot about these series. Is there one or two guys in this postseason that you really think could be a difference maker that not a lot of people are talking about? Because obviously Shohei Ohtani does Shohei Ohtani things. He's amazing for the LA Dodgers. We all know what you're going to be able to get moving forward out of Cal Raleigh whenever he's in the lineup for the Seattle Mariners. But is there maybe a guy or two that not a lot of people are talking about that you really think could turn the tide for one of these teams in the postseason?
A couple stick out with me. We'll start with Los Angeles. I mean, having Roky Sasaki as a dominant closer, that takes the Dodgers to a new level of dominant. You know, they tried Blake Treinen, which was questionable, to say the least. Dave Roberts, what are you doing? Go to Roky Sasaki. But if Roky Sasaki is this guy that he is seemingly to be, this Dodger team has no weakness. Because that coming into the postseason, the bullpen was questionable. Turning our attention to Seattle, they need a third hitter to step up in that lineup. Because Cal Raleigh, Julio Rodriguez, they're riding hot bats right now, which is exactly what you want for Seattle. But it can't be two guys doing it all. You've got to have a Randy Arozarena. You got to have a Josh Naylor. It was Jorge Polanco in game two. You have to have somebody in that lineup step up, because I've been preaching this for years in Seattle. This is a World Series caliber starting rotation to go along with a World Series caliber bullpen. That is how talented these arms are. up in the Pacific Northwest. If they can just get some sort of offensive consistency, but not just from Raleigh, not just from J-Rod, they've got to have somebody else step up, just like Jorge Polanco did in game two. I'm not asking anybody hit two home runs a game like Polanco did, but he got to have some more bop besides those two guys. So my one X factor in the NL would be Roky Sasaki. For the American League, somebody in that Seattle lineup has to step up.
Yep, absolutely. With the Seattle Mariners, even a guy like Adam Canzone had a three home run game earlier in the season as well. You mentioned Randy Arozarena and all those guys. So I'm right there with you. That is going to be key. And what's always key on this podcast is getting on great guests like you, Danny. You're doing an amazing job over at CBS Sports and the Wake and Rake podcast. So love to get people to know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
I appreciate the time, Greg. Yeah, a lot of content coming down the pipeline. Our YouTube page, our social media pages, at CBS Sports, and then my personal handles, at Danny Vietti.
And Danny, he does such an amazing job taking a look at this great game of baseball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insight. So, big thanks to Danny for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch the ball.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here, lovely Las Vegas, for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be able to get Danny Vietti aboard. He does such great work over at CBS Sports, along with that, the Wake and Rake podcast. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So, big thanks to Danny for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at @GUnit_81. We are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we're going to go with those two American League games first, the Blue Jays Yankees and Mariners versus Tigers, and then Brewers, Cubs, and Phillies Dodgers will round it out. So how about if we do start with that first American League game of 905-906? It is the Blue Jays on the road against the Yankees. This game is currently off the board. I'm doing this as they're just wrapping up game number three, and I do have to have this up by midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern, but that said, with the Yankees, we know that they're going to be throwing Cam Schlittler, and for the Toronto Blue Jays, it is old undecided. Now, for the Blue Jays, it's not going to change too much based on the starter because this is going to be essentially a bullpen game. I expect Eric Lauer to be a little bit more of a bulk guy, but I said with the Blue Jays, I did set them to where I need at least a +150 to take a shot on them. For the Yankees, made their money line a -157, so want to lay a -156 or better there. Or if I could get above a +145 on the run line, we'll be looking at the Yankees and set a total of a 7.8, 7.5 or less. I'll be in on the over and 8 or higher to the under. Now for the New York Yankees, this bullpen has been concerning to say the least, as they have had their issues. They had to use up so many guys like David Benar and company in the game in game number three. But that said, Cam Schlittler, coming off of 8 scoreless, 12 strikeouts in his last start against the Boston Red Sox, he is probably due for a little bit of regression. You take a look at him during the regular season, and he was posting up a sub-2.95 ERA, which if you include that postseason start, now down to a 2.63 ERA overall. But that said, even though he is getting 10.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, his regular season fielding dependent was a 3.74. He is giving up 3.4 walks per 9 innings. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, post All-Star break, they're averaging over 5.5 runs per game. That is number one in all baseball. Not necessarily super hot out there in Yankee Stadium. A little bit better than what you're typically going to find in October, though. In October, it typically gets a little bit colder than what it is. But I do think that after we saw a lot of hot offense in game number three, that things are going to cool down a little bit in game number four. Aaron Judge came up with a massive home run that was able to really uplift the Yankees when they needed it, because they were down either 3 or 4 runs when he hit that home run. He's actually been rock solid here in the postseason. You've had Trent Grisham be a nice form of power as well, 30 plus home runs during the regular season. Giancarlo Stanton has been a little bit shaky here in the postseason, but still a guy that between the regular season and postseason is getting a home run every about 11.5 at bats. You've had Ryan McMahon be able to move the line a little bit as well. So for the Yankees, 1 through 9, it has been very rock solid for them. And obviously with the Blue Jays, it has been as well. Vlad Guerrero Jr., 3 home runs in 3 games is obviously amazing. And Ernie Clement, Dalton Varsho, they both are hitting above 500 in this series. So those guys have been solid. You haven't gotten anything out of Jhazir Kinnear-Falefa. And very curious that they bring back Anthony Santander. He came up with a pair of RBI in game number 3. And we all know what he's capable of, even though he missed much of the season. George Springer has been one of the main catalysts for this team. 29 home runs, above a 380 on base during the regular season. But I think that Schlittler is going to go out there and shut them down. And for the Blue Jays, if you do get Eric Lauer as a little bit more of a bulk guy, he has been very rock solid. And I really question the fact that they did take him out of the starting rotation because he did post up a sub-3.25 ERA during the regular season. Now, I know that his fielding dependent was a little bit higher, but he's been able to get some good swing and miss stuff thus far this season. 8.8 strikeouts at 2.2 walks per 9 innings. Does give up about 1.3 home runs per 9 innings. The big concern here for the Blue Jays is more of these long guys, as you've got the likes of Braden Fisher, Brandon Little, Yuriel Rodriguez. They all posted up above a 3.50 ERA post All-Star break after having really nice starts through the season. Sir Anthony Dominguez has been pretty solid in this bullpen as well, but for the Blue Jays, they didn't necessarily get what they were hoping for out of Shane Bieber, so pretty much all the guys I mentioned, they all had to be used up in the game yesterday. Mason Fluharty had to throw 19 pitches, so I do think that the Blue Jays are going to be up against it. I do think that we see a bit of regression with the offense after what we saw in game number 3, so 7.5 or less in on the over and 8 or higher to the under, with the Yankees willing to lay up to a -156 on the money line or +145 or better. Looking at the run line, +158 or better in on the Blue Jays. 9.33 and 9.34 on the card. The Mariners are on the road. They're facing off against the Detroit Tigers. Bryce Miller goes for Seattle. Casey Mize goes for Detroit. Detroit is anywhere between a -114 to a -123 favorite. Between +102 to a -102 is that number on Seattle. 8.5 is the total. Under is -115. The over is -105. I said my total is 7.6, I'm in on the under. I recognize that, again, the conditions out there in Detroit, they could be far worse than they typically are in the month of October, but I do think that you're going to be able to get a rock-solid start out of Casey Mize, a guy that in his last appearance, he went 3 innings, gave up 1 run in that wildcard round against the Cleveland Guardians. Overall, for the season, has been steady. Not necessarily amazing, but still 3.85 ERA, 1.3 home runs, 2.3 walks allowed per 9 innings between the regular season and the postseason. You do have two offenses have been very rock solid this year. For the Mariners, 5.1 runs per game away from home. That is number 3 in all baseball. And for the Tigers, 4.9 runs per game. That is in the top 8 in all baseball. But I do think that, again, the weather is going to be affecting things just a little bit now between the regular season and the postseason. Big jumper Cal Raleigh up to 61 home runs. Just absolutely incredible. You've got Josh Naylor, who I think that his wife is like expecting a child. So congratulations there. We were talking about that with Danny Vietti, but he's had a little bit of a rough series thus far. But JP Crawford has really been moving the line, hitting above a 300. He had a home run yesterday. Randy Arozarena, he's been a little bit up down all around, but he, Julio Rodriguez, both hit over 28 home runs during the regular season. Both of these guys are able to get on effectively, and Eugenio Suarez, he's got a home run here in the postseason, and that's his lone hit. He has been very all or nothing, and for the Detroit Tigers, you do have plenty of guys that all throughout the season have been able to move the line and get on base. The likes of Kerry Carpenter, Gleyber Torres, Riley Green, all hitting at least a 250, with Green being able to supply 35 home runs during the regular season. Carpenter above 25 home runs. Spencer Torkelson, 30 plus home runs with about a 340 on base. Dylan Dingler was sitting about a 272, 275 during the regular season. You've got Zach McKinstry not really getting on base here in the postseason, but during the regular season, he was hitting ball above a 250, so have a lot of firepower there. And for the Detroit Tigers, this is a bullpen that can be a little bit shaky. You did see Brandt Herter come in for 1 2/3 innings in the game yesterday, so that might be knocking him out of things, but he still do have, in my opinion, a bullpen that should be able to hold down the fort, as you've been able to get some relatively good production out of Kyle Finnegan ever since he's come to town, although, and we'll say in game number 2, that was a little bit less than amazing, but he, Will Vest, Troy Melton, who was the opener in that game number 1, they've all been able to give you a sub-350 ERA overall for the season. Tyler Holton has been a little bit of an issue. For the Seattle Mariners, the top guys are the top guys. I thought it was big that the Detroit Tigers were able to get to Andres Munoz yesterday, as he, Matt Brash, Edward Bizzardo, and Gabe Spire have all been able to give you a sub-3 ERA throughout the season, but we saw Caleb Ferguson and what he did in terms of his work. That's not necessarily amazing. And for Bryce Miller, it's just not been a good season for him overall for his career. He has an ERA that's about a full point and a half higher when he's on the road rather than at home. This season, 5.68 ERA, 7.4 strikeouts per 9 innings, giving up 1.7 home runs, 3.4 walks per 9 innings. I think he rounds into form a little bit more here. Been a little bit of an injury-riddled season, so this might be the most healthy that he's been all season, but do think that the Tigers find a way to get the job done. Willing to lay up to a -140 on that Tigers money line, and my total is 7.6, so I'm going to be in on that under. 9:35, 9:36 on the card. It is the Cubs, and they play us to the Milwaukee Brewers as Quinn Priester gets a start for the Brewers, and Jameson Taillon is on the bump for the Cubs. The Cubs are a slim favorite here, between minus 118 to a minus 123, between even money and plus 108. That number on the Brewers, 6.5 to 7 is the total on the 6.5. Over is minus 120, and the under is even, and on the 7, the under is minus 120, and the over is even, and I said my total at 6.4. I'm going to be in on this under, mainly because the wind is going to be blowing in big time in this one. You're going to be getting 10-mile-per-hour winds, and again, 60 degrees in Chicago in early October is actually not bad temperatures whatsoever, trust me. I lived in Wisconsin for the first 22 years of my life, but that said, certainly not hitterish conditions, so I do like this under. And for Quinn Priester, the Brewers are 19-1 in the last 20 games that he has pitched in. It's absolutely remarkable. I do think that there's regression coming for him, though. 3.32 ERA compared to a 4.01 fielding pennant, 7.6 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's not really blowing you away. He's given up 3 walks per 9. For Priester, it's actually been very intriguing. He's been much better when he has been on the road rather than at home. For Mr. Priester, he's got an ERA of a 3.82 at home, 2.91 ERA on the road, and he's giving up about 1 home run per 9 innings in both locations. And Jameson Taillon comes in really good form. If you combine the regular season and the postseason for Taillon, he has given up 8 runs over the course of his last 8 starts. Overall for the season, a 3.68 ERA. He did give up during the regular season right around about 1.6 or 1.7 home runs per 9 innings, but has been able to round into form. And it's not like this is a Brewers team that's necessarily hitting a whole bunch of bombs. As a matter of fact, for the Brewers, they were in the lower half of the big leagues in terms of home runs on a per at bat basis during the regular season. Jackson Chourio and Christian Yelich being the lone two guys on the roster with at least 20 home runs this season. But you do have just a cavalcade of different guys that they find a way to move the line, get on base. Bryce Turang, Sal Frelick, William Contreras, Yelich, who I mentioned before, Caleb Durbin, they've all been able to give you at least a 330 on base this season. Andrew Vaughn and Isaac Collins above a 370 on base if you look at Vaughn in a Brewers uniform and a Brewers uniform only. So they've done their part, and this is a Brewers bullpen that is very rock solid. I do, again, have a few question marks with Priester and if he's able to keep it up, but likes of Nick Mears, Abner Uribe, Trevor McGill, Aaron Ashby, who turned out to be the starter in game number 2. And all these guys for the season have been able to give you a sub-3.25 ERA. And then for the Chicago Cubs, likes of Daniel Palencia, Drew Pomeranz, Caleb Theobar, they have been really good in this bullpen as well, being able to give you that sub-3 ERA for the season. And for the Cubs, they're averaging only about 4.1 runs per game ever since the All-Star break. That is in the bottom 10 in all of baseball, but regular season and postseason, Michael Busch up to 32 plus home runs this season, supplying about a 340 on base. You've had Sei Suzuki really find it here in the postseason, 2 home runs here after he was really having a rough second half of the season, but found it in that last series of the regular season as well against the St. Louis Cardinals. They've got a nice rookie option off the bench in Moises Ballesteros, who I think is very rock solid. He and Carson Kelly are a nice 1-2 punch at the catcher spot. Ian Happ has been a little bit hapless at the plate here in the postseason, but between the post-All-Star break numbers of the regular season and the postseason, Nico Hoerner hitting above a 3.25. Dansby Swanson has been a little bit hit or miss on. Again, with the wind blowing in so much, I think that this is going to be a day for the pitchers, but I just really like this form of Jameson Taillon to be able to shut down the Brewers, even though the Brewers do lead the National League in terms of run creation post-All-Star break. Did semi total 6.4, like the under, and I do like the Cubs on the money line. And wrap things up with 9:37, 9:38 on the card. The Dodgers play host to the Philadelphia Phillies. Aaron Nola hopes to be super for the Phillies, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto is on the bump for the Dodgers. 7.5 to 8 is the total on the 7.5. Overs minus 115 to minus 120. Unders between even to minus 105. And then reverse it for the 8. On the 8, the over is between minus 105 to even money, and the under is between minus 115 to minus 120. For the Dodgers, they are between minus 170 to minus 181 favorites, and then plus 146 to plus 155. That number on the Phillies, if you're looking to lay a run after the Dodgers, that's right around about plus 120 to plus 125, and I'm going to be willing to lay it with that Dodgers run line. I was willing to take a plus 111 or greater. Aaron Nola just has not been good this season. He has given up 4 plus runs in 7 out of his last 10 starts. He's giving up 1.7 home runs per 9 innings with a 6.01 ERA. That is not great, to say the least. Like, he's just completely lost. I felt like he shouldn't be pitching here in the postseason to begin with, but for the Philadelphia Phillies, with not having Zach Wheeler out there, they sort of ran out of options. And for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, he comes in very good form. 3 earned runs allowed over the course of his last 6 starts. He did give up 2 runs in that start against the Reds. Both of those were unearned runs, but he's really got things rocking rocking and rolling between the regular season and the postseason. 10.5 strikeouts to 3 walks per 9 innings. Does have a slightly higher ERA when he's at home, but between the regular season and the postseason, a sub-250 ERA, so he has been very rock solid. And we talked about Danny Vietti. This is a Dodgers bullpen that all of a sudden they are much, much better with their bullpen, with now having Roky Sasaki, Tyler Glass now out there. The actual bullpen pieces like Alex Vesia, he's been fine, so we're not going to throw slander on Alex Vesia, but we will on the likes of Kirby Yates, Tanner Scott, Blake Treinen. These guys have just not been great this year, and they've all been dealing with injury, but being able to revamp that bullpen is big. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, this is a lineup that they have much better when they are at home rather than away from home, averaging in that neighborhood about 5.3 runs per game at home. Away from home, the Phillies are actually in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of run creation. The fall off is more like 4.2-ish runs per contest. You do get back Trey Turner down for what, and he had a critical at-bat in game number 2 in which he did not come through. And you've got Kyle Schwarber giving you Schwarbombs, 53-plus home runs, over a 350 on base. And then for the regular season, Bryce Harper, 25-plus home runs above a 350 on base. And you got a lot of other guys that they find a way on base, like Alec Bohm is hitting over a 275 this season. Armando Sosa has been rock solid, and Brandon Marsh, Harrison Bader, these guys find a way on. But outside of Harper and Schwarber, not a ton of power. And for the LA Dodgers, this is all about power. For Shohei Ohtani, over 50 home runs at a 380 on base during the regular season. I recognize that Mookie Betts not having the season that I was hoping for, but he has been very good in this series, hitting a 389 and post-All-Star break. Overall, he's been hitting above a 280. Teoscar Hernandez, he has been very good in this series, and overall for the season, 26 plus home runs. Not necessarily the best at being able to draw walks, but still, he's been able to do his part. Max Muncy, whenever he's in the lineup, the Dodgers actually average about a full run half per game more when he's in there rather than when he's out of the lineup. And for Muncy, when the team was without him, they were sub-500. They also get back Will Smith, who's getting jiggy with it, about a 400 base during the regular season. Freddie Freeman has been rock solid. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, this is a bullpen that's highly suspect. Obviously, Yoan Duran is rock solid, and you do have a Ryan Kerkering, Tanner Banks, Max Strom, who during the season had a ERA below a 350, but I mean, we have seen them really have their issues, especially in game number 1, and with Aaron Nola just being a complete train wreck, I do think that the Dodgers are going to get to him and hit him hard. Semi-total at 8.1. I like the over and that Dodgers run line, and that'll wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Danny Vietti, who does such great work over at CBS Sports. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline, @GUnit_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast by that 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day, which we've got postseason action, so I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.